Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on this choke horse. But it's no horse bar, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold. What is up, everybody? It's your boy, Weed Too Deep. We are back with another episode of the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast. And this episode is jam-packed. We're talking Pat McAfee. We're talking last Friday's TLC match. Was it a hit or a miss? We're talking about the greatest tag team in wrestling. We're going to break that down. Who's the greatest tag team today? Break down some of my displeasure with this Lyra Valkyria and Becky Lynch feud. There's a lot of complaining about the crowd for these American shows, but we're gonna address that, and I'm gonna tell you the real issue with the crowds. And the hint is it's not the noise. We're gonna discuss whether Backlash is a little bit disappointing from a card perspective. We'll look at some of the potential matches that are gonna happen there. We got some confirmed, but we'll round out the card. We'll talk about why I think that card's a little bit disappointing and what I think they're actually building to from a strategic perspective later this month. We'll talk about the Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins angle right now. And we will end with a brand new segment that we will end the Friday shows with. My name's Weed2Deep. Let's tune on in to this. Let's get started with it. First, let's get to a little bit of a housekeeping type thing, right? So as of this episode, this will be the last episode where that warning thing will play, because I believe the language of that does push away other more hardcore fans. And what I've come to recognize as I've done podcasts here recently, what I've realized is, while I will still consider myself a casual fan, I'm sort of this wrestling fan that I'm not necessarily what a lot of people would think of as casual, right? And so what I want to do is define casual real quick. Casual to me, first off, is a spectrum. Fandom and wrestling is a spectrum. I hate that we have, like, you're either hardcore or you're casual. Some of us are in the middle, and we're informed. So, like, there's the super casuals and then the informed casuals. And then, right, and so there are different, you know, places on the spectrum you could be, right? And so casual to me isn't based on how much you watch the product, but how you view the product. And so to me, a casual fan is someone who watches wrestling and they don't let the outcome of the show, they don't let the outcome of the television show affect them on a daily basis outside of watching wrestling. Right. So to me, a casual fan can 100% watch everything out there, New Japan, all of that stuff. Most casuals won't, but I think there's the freedom for you to still be called a casual and to watch everything that's out there. TNA, AEW, you could spend, you know, every day of the week watching wrestling if that's your favorite thing to do, right? If that's a hobby for you, if wrestling, right, and still be casual. In that you don't, right? You could talk about wrestling. You could do podcasts. You can listen to podcasts, right? That doesn't make you a hardcore fan. A hardcore fan, to me, is someone who watches the product and the their day-to-day life is wrapped up in the results of the product, right? For me, it's a little different because you would say, well, you guys talk about the results on the podcast. It makes you, but we talk about them, but once we're done talking about them, we move on, right? Right. So I'm not over here thinking, oh man, John Cena beating Cody Rhodes, that ruined my week. No, what ruined my week was Dwayne not showing up. No, I'm kidding. But there are fans out there who, literally, if their favorites don't win, their week is ruined. And they don't watch it for the entertainment factor. They watch it for some other reason, right? So I bring this up because I want to have this first conversation. And we'll get to the question here in a minute. But the show Slapping Me Wrestling, when I say we're rebranding, and what I mean by rebranding is the logos are staying the same, the color scheme is staying the same. All that's fine. That's not what I mean by rebranding. But the content and I'll just be honest, I've felt over the last couple, you know, months, week, you know, about year or so, this desire to not be so divisive towards the IWC, but I haven't because it almost feels like if you're claiming to be a casual fan, you have to like go to war with the IWC, right? And I've even used words like that. But the problem is it's not the whole IWC, right? The problem I have a lot of times with the casual fan base, if I can just be honest to you guys, because I know a lot of you listen, is we immediately try to create a war with the community. And one of my favorite things that I enjoyed about going to WrestleMania 33, one of the things that I left that space feeling was that I went, and outside of the group of people that I went with, I knew no one there. And no matter what event I went to, whether if it was an Access or the Hall of Fame or Monday Raw after or Tuesday, that at the time Tuesday was SmackDown, right? You remember that, right? It was Monday Night Raw, Tuesday Night SmackDown. And so that Mania week was Hall of Fame on Friday. We went to Access on Saturday. We had one day WrestleMania on Sunday, Monday Night Raw after Mania, and then Tuesday Night SmackDown after Mania, right? And then we left quite literally drove home Tuesday night after SmackDown. We stopped it was in Orlando. We stopped right before we got into Georgia because half the group wanted to sleep. Me and the other guy didn't want to, but we stayed at another hotel for the night and then left Wednesday morning, basically. And so anyway, with that being said, like one of the things that I left was I didn't have to, like, I did an interview for WWE Germany, did a interview for a Maryland-based radio show, right? I didn't know anyone, but we all came for the same reason, and that was to watch wrestling. And it didn't matter if you were casual, it didn't matter if you were hardcore, it didn't matter if you were, right, you were there to watch wrestling. And there was a camaraderie there, and so as much as I love this community, one of the things that does, it's starting to annoy me more and more, is the understanding that the casual wrestling community is a subgroup within the IWC as a whole. And this idea that the wrestling fans don't live on the internet, right? And so this idea that, and this is not just wrestling, we hear this all the time that like Twitter isn't real life. And while I agree, I also disagree. Like that's a yes and a no to me, right? Because what we're starting to see with the newer generation, and again, this might be a generational thing, but my generation and younger, we get our news from Twitter because we don't trust the mainstream news sources. We like, I've met so many people and talked to so many people online, like through Discord, through Twitter, through stuff like that, that, that would not have been possible in the 80s and 90s. It just wasn't even fathomable for that generation. But for this generation that grew up in the, you know, I was born in 97, right? So I'm not a 90s baby at all. I'm a 2000s kid, right? So who grew up in the 2000s and the 2010s, this new generation, we grew up online. And that is where that generation's starting to become, as the baby boomers are dying off, yet Gen X hitting their 50s, and they're still doing things the way they did it in the 80s and 90s, but you have a large group of the millennials and Gen Z who all of their news comes from online. All of their entertainment comes from either TikTok, Twitter, because now Twitter has reels. I don't know if you guys know that, but that's why all these apps are doing reels and right? Because that's where the entertainment source is. And so this idea that the wrestling fan base as a whole doesn't live on Twitter, I don't think it's rational. I don't think it's logical, and I don't think it lives within the facts of the situation. Are there wrestling fans who come to shows who aren't on Twitter? Sure. 100%. But not just from a wrestling perspective, but even politics. 90% of the people that I know in politics that I've react, you know, all of my sort of what I would, I guess, say relationships within the political world would be made online. I don't know a single person in my personal life on a political level, right? I get all my news on my politics, all of that from Twitter, because it's more trusted from those sources, right? And so I just, the idea now in our current generation that the town square isn't X. That's literally the reason Elon Musk bought it, was because he wanted to form a town square where you have the freedom to express yourself and your opinion. And you could be wrong, but you could have that discussion, right? And so the idea that the IWC is such a small subgroup that lives on Twitter, it's just not true. They're the ones going to the shows. They are. They are, right? They are the ones going to the shows. Or at least 85%. I'm willing to bet that 85% of the audience on a given week in a wrestling show, you will find on TikTok or Twitter at some point during the week. I don't believe that there's a large, vast majority of casual fans out there. I don't. It's bigger in the WWE. 100% agree with that. That there's a larger realm of, right? But what I believe is to be true, and there's no way to really monitor these statistics, so it really just has to be an opinion. From my experience, I think a lot of wrestling fans that are part of the IWC. So my whole point is that we're rebranding the show to not exclude the hardcore fans, because I want them in the conversation. I've always done this for two reasons. One, to give me a place to put my opinions, but two, to create conversation. If you guys, there's part of the reason why We Too Deep is stuck as a nickname for me, because I do love the deep conversations. We're going in the deep end, especially for this conversation, because now we're going to get to the question. So the question is, and this comes from a conversation that was had in one of my Discords. Can you be a big name? Can you be a big superstar in the wrestling world outside of WWE? Because this comes off of a person's opinion that no matter how big Joe Hendry gets, until he's done it week to week on WWE, he's not the biggest baby face in the wrestling industry. And I'm sorry. Jey Uso is not bigger than Joe Hendry to me. He's just not. He's not a bigger baby face. Joe Hendry is over. And I think that Joe Hendry being over, as long as he's been over, he's reached mainstream realms. He's reached, you know, the peak of being over in wrestling. Right now, is he someone that you know, a random on the street's going to know. No, but show someone Seth Rollins, show a random on the street who has never watched wrestling Seth Rollins' picture or Jey Uso's picture, and I promise you they won't know who they are either. They'll know Cena. They'll probably maybe will know Roman Reigns. But you're not asking a random on the street who's never watched wrestling. You're not showing them a picture of Jey Uso, and they're not going to eat, right? You're going to have some sort of wrestling knowledge to know at least to even know a Jey Uso, right? And you know how I know this? Because Jey Uso was at the NFL draft to announce a pick, and this boy was yeeting on stage, and not a single person in Green Bay gave a fuck because they were there for the NFL draft, right? Right. Same thing with Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins was out there. Not a single person cared that he was like this dude gave a whole promo. Now he played his heel role good, but not a single person in the crowd at the NFL draft was chanting for Seth Rollins or singing his song the way they right. Even within the realm of WWE, they're not as mainstream as you think they are. Right. John Cena announced a Patriots pick or was part of a Patriots pick, and he got a little bit of a reaction, but everyone knows John Cena, right? I don't think Jey Uso is as mainstream as casual fans think he is. You still have to know about the world of wrestling to know who Jey Uso is. I think the same thing with Cody, right? Wrestling is a niche product that maybe 10% of the American populace consume at least once per year. We're not as mainstream as they think. Because even with like the Travis Scott stuff, right? There's probably 40 to 50% of the American population who don't listen to mainstream rap music, who have zero clue who Travis Scott is or who Cardi B is, or right? That's just the reality of the situation. And so even like the Travis Scott stuff with Jey Uso, and that's not going to make him mainstream because there are people who don't listen to that style of music and wouldn't know who Travis Scott is. I'm just going to be completely honest with you, right? So I do believe, that you can become a superstar outside of the WWE system. It's just much harder. Here's why I respect Joe Hendry. He didn't have a machine behind him that was 100% designed to get him over. He just didn't have that machine. He got over organically by himself. Right? So the conversation was, is there ever been a point where TNA was better than WWE? And so I'm going to say what I said in that conversation, and I'm going to stand on that business here. And from a product perspective, if we take out from a product perspective, right, that's what I'm talking about. Is the product better? Because I think that at the end of the day, that's what matters in wrestling, right? Because I'm going to sound like an AEW mark when I say this, because this was, I agree with this in that WWE has a machine, an infrastructure in place in terms of the amount of money they have, the way they market, the contacts that they have in the entertainment sphere and in the press, right? That most wrestling companies in existence have never had. Now, I'm not going to sit here and be like, what AEW likes to do is, oh, well, they had a 40-year advantage. Well, no, that's because for most of that 40 years, WWE was struggling. WWE almost closed down in the 90s, right? I don't think people realize how close WWE was to shutting its doors. If anything, without the Attitude Era, WWE probably doesn't exist right now because the business wasn't popular in the early 90s. it just wasn't popular in the early 90s, especially with McMahon doing the cartoony children-esque characters, right? And this is why I always hate this idea that we got to book for the kids, because I've even said that before, and I definitely have changed my opinion on it. We've got to book for the kids, because if you get the kids, you get the parents. Well, yes, but C.S. Lewis is quoted as saying, the best children's story is written for the adults. It's a children's story, so you take your kids to go see it, but you write it so that the adults are entertained as well. That's how you make a good children's story. Because here's the scientific data, right? Kids, for the most part, kids up until they get to the about to be a teenager, because there is a difference here, right? So from about 5 to 12, they are entertained by anything, right? I remember, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who did this. I got to find two instruments. I remember in school, even in high school, I did this when I was bored in class, or it was like end of grade testing, and I always finished early because those tests are easy as fuck, in my opinion, right? And you just had to sit there, right? How many of you ever played like football or wrestling with pins, right? Or, you know, how many of you as kids grew up and you could play with the door stopper for hours on end? Because children are entertained by anything. And there's a scientific reason behind it. There's a scientific, again, up to about age 12, 13, 14, right? They have a much wilder imagination. Anything that creates a stimulus probably is a new experience. And so it's creating brain synapses and connections, right? That are brand new experiences for them, so that keeps them entertained. There's a reason we as adults get bored more easier. We lose our imagination, and there's nothing new. There's really not a new experience. That's why adults, there are people like Darby Allin who are thrill seekers, and they get bored easily. And so when the idea of going to Mount Everest, because it's an adventure, pops up, they do it. Because as an adult, especially when you get into the monotony of the day-to-day life where you do the same thing Monday to Friday and then the weekends are all spent the same way, right? And it's the monotony of life. You lose that imagination. You lose your creativity. There's nothing new anymore. But as a child, seeing Jey Uso dance, that's entertaining to you. As an adult, it's not as entertaining. Why? Because it's corny, right? But you have no understanding of what corny is or what, right, as a child. And so, yes, have some characters for the children. Have your Jey Usos and your Cody Rhodes for the children. But understand, like, that with WWE, there is a marketing machine designed 100% for Jey Uso to get over. And the point that I'm saying here is, had TNA, and let's actually start in the 90s, had ECW, if ECW had the budget and the marketing that WWE had in 1996, prior to the Attitude Era beginning, ECW would have wiped WWE off the face of wrestling. They would be the number one brand. 100% believe that. They were so innovative. It was so brand new to a worldwide audience of this idea of extreme wrestling. And they were so popular. They were so ahead of their time. They just didn't have the budget. And eventually Paul Heyman ran out of money. And that is why he basically partnered with and eventually got bought out by Vince McMahon. Right? If TNA in the early 2000s, especially during the early AJ Styles, Samoa Joe's day, I wasn't even watching back then, had zero clue who they were, right? Had zero clue who they were. Had they had the budget that WWE had and the marketing that WWE had at that time period, their product alone, I think, would have, where they could have made it to the major mainstream casual fans, their product alone was better from a product perspective, right? And I always say it this way, right? There are restaurants out there who are putting out way better products than a lot of these name brand fast food joints, right? But they don't have the marketing to reach the mass world, so not a lot of people know about them. But that doesn't mean that their product is bad. So just because you don't know as an individual or casuals as a group don't know about Joe Hendry, that doesn't mean that he didn't work his ass off to get to where he's at. And he should be rewarded for getting over in a mainstream audience to where WWE had no choice but to bring in Joe Hendry. They had no choice. At some point, you were going to have to bring in Joe Hendry. That was how over he was. He was over, right? And one of my best examples of this, of how being commercially successful doesn't mean that you're the best product, is 2016 through 2019 WWE. That product was awful. You were getting Sucker and Succotash. Roman doused in dog food. You had Triple H won the title at Royal Rumble, right? He beat Roman Reigns in the Royal Rumble match. That's how, first off, how injury plagued that roster was at WrestleMania, was that Triple H was the main event of that show. Roman had to defend his title in the Royal Rumble match, which was stupid in and of itself. That pay-per-view was just that WrestleMania 32 was awful. And that was 2016. The booking was inconsistent. Vince was not being creative during this time period. And a lot of wrestling fans started to walk away, which is why AEW was a necessity in 2019. Because if AEW was not created as a company, I don't know if people are watching wrestling. I will give them that credit. But AEW is suffering from the very same thing that killed WCW, is a lack of, and really the same thing that really made TNA struggle when Dixie bought the company, is a lack of competent leadership. I'm 100% convinced, because here's the thing. AEW can't complain about not having the marketing, the budget, or the marketing infrastructure. You have more money, or had up until Endeavor and TKO bought the company, right? But you have the infrastructure there. The problem is you have a money mark running the show. I'm going to make this hot take. If AEW, with the talent and roster they have right now, if Tony Khan backed off of running the day-to-day operations and created a booking team led by someone like Bryan Danielson and Billy Gunn and the people who have let the wrestling people do the wrestling, and Tony Khan just financed the thing, AEW, I thoroughly believe, could start outdoing WWE. 100% believe that. If you remove the egos and the incompetency that's backstage, and Tony Khan released the, and I'm going to use an example from the sports world of why I believe this is true. AEW and the way Tony Khan runs it is wrestling's version of the Dallas Cowboys. Right? The Dallas Cowboys continue to suffer because of Jerry Jones. It's literally the only reason. He thinks he can do football better than football people. If Jerry Jones stepped away, hired a director of football operations, I think the team becomes better just overnight, because you put the football people in charge of the football. And one of the examples that I want to use for that is the Washington Commanders. This was a team who for decades had incompetent ownership that was a distraction with Dan Snyder, right? The second Dan Snyder sold the team and Josh Harris bought it, Josh Harris knows he's not a football guy. He hires football people to handle the football operations, and they make the playoffs the first year that that happens. And are in a position to start competing in the NFC East. Notice I didn't say win. I think the Eagles are still a better team. But the Commanders used to be like, you're fourth place preseason rankings every year, to a place now where they are immediately in 2 years seated in at possibly making the playoffs again. Right? And so if Tony, and if someone else stay by this, I'm going to say it again, I'm going to stand on it, then we're going to move on. You can be a big name outside of WWE. AJ Styles in his prime, there's a lot of history there that a casual fan would have to go and look up as to why AJ Styles wasn't in WWE in 2002. He was offered a contract, though. So WWE wanted him, right? So at the end of the day, though, if the playing fields were even throughout history, WWE historically has not put on the best product. There are product out there that are being created by promotions that have 1/16th of WWE's budget that are just outdoing WWE creatively throughout time, right? TNA had their golden years, and it was the best thing in wrestling at the time. Just didn't have the budget and the mainstream, you know, TV deals and the marketing to get behind it, right? But if they did, WWE doesn't exist. I thoroughly believe that. Thoroughly believe ECW would have wiped WWE off the map. I thoroughly believe if WCW had competent leadership at the, you know, at the turn of the century, that WCW doesn't die. Also, there's a lot of history there. Warner didn't want wrestling at the time, and so they essentially killed it off. But you get the point. The WWE is the, listen to what I'm not saying in this conversation, though. WWE is the king. It's where you want to go as a wrestler. Absolutely. But that doesn't make it the best product. And what I feel with a lot of casual fans is that they only know WWE, and so that's the only, to them, that's number one. But I don't necessarily think that's necessarily true. From a product perspective, there has always been something I think outdoing WWE. Right? And Vince always ran, if it didn't happen in WWE, it didn't exist. And so he treated the business that way. So I feel like a lot of the fans that grew up sort of believing in Vince's bullshit view the business that way. I know I used to view the business that way. And it's an ignorant way to view, I'm just being honest, it's an ignorant way to view the business. Right? Because I brought up 2016 to 2019 WWE. In 2018, the hottest thing in the wrestling business was the Bullet Club. It was the Young Bucks. It was Kenny Omega. It was Cody Rhodes, Marty Scurll, Hangman Page, right? They were the hottest thing in pro wrestling. Okada was one of the biggest names in pro wrestling. People wouldn't have known it because if you're not in the business, you don't know about everything that goes on in the business. And if all you know about is WWE, right? And again, WWE's the kingpin, but that doesn't make them the best. Their product was ass during this time, which is why I believe people were looking for these alternatives and searching for the Bullet Club and searching for Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks and Omega. There was a reason before AEW was created why the Young Bucks in Omega in 2018, early 2019, before they announced, were having meetings with WWE. They were the hottest thing on the planet. They were the hottest thing on the planet when it comes to wrestling. So I just, from a history and understanding wrestling, you don't have to be in WWE to be a big star within the wrestling business. But again, if you look at it the way Vince McMahon and WWE has sort of I don't want to use the word brainwash because I don't think it's brainwash. I'll say programmed. WWE only fans have been programmed by Vince McMahon to view WWE as the only thing out there, which is why, as much as I complain about Triple H's booking because it's not the greatest, his view on wrestling, his view that there are other things outside of WWE, and there are different styles and fans of different things, right? I complain a lot, and a lot of that complaining about the other styles was me sort of trying to reach the casual audience. But here's what I've noticed, and this is how we'll wrap this segment up. I know it's been this could have been a podcast in itself, right? A lot of what I said then was trying to get the casual audience. But the casual audience, I promise you, is so, so small compared to what I think the casual fans think it is. Because the wrestling fans that... I thoroughly believe the conversation... I thoroughly believe the IWC is 90% at the most. But somewhere between 75 and 90% of the people in the crowds at wrestling shows... thoroughly believer IWC. I don't believe that there's this large mass of uneducated wrestling fans. What I also don't understand is that the casual people, like the casual wrestling community, treat fans, I'm be honest, they sort of insult the intelligence and the faculty of a lot of wrestling fans as if we don't all have cell phones. So if I don't know something, right, I know this excuse pisses people off, and this is something that I've sort of gotten mad at before, but I thoroughly actually think it's actually a logical thing to say. If I don't know who someone is, like, I'll be honest with you, if I'm watching a movie and I'm like, who is this actor? I've seen him before, but I don't know his name. I'm Googling that shit, and it takes 30 fucking seconds. And so if a wrestler shows up, I can Google who he is to get a brief overview. Now, where that line is drawn is the company has to make me care about that person, right? If AEW is going to bring out some dude who had a big feud with Ospreay in Japan, you have to give me that information. You can't expect me to go do 7 hours of research on that feud. You have to feed me that. That's your job. But if I don't know who Konosuke Takeshita is when he debuted, I could have easily searched Konosuke Takeshita and figured out who he was, right? Where he came from. If I didn't know AJ Styles when he debuted, right? And for people who don't believe AJ Styles, go listen to his Royal Rumble debut. He got a pop, baby. He was popular even, you know, 10 years past his prime. I'm just saying, like you can be a big star outside of wrestling, outside of the WWE. You could be a big star outside of WWE within the wrestling industry just because you're not commercially appealing or commercially viable doesn't mean, right? It doesn't mean that you aren't a superstar. Joe Hendry, without a doubt, is the biggest babyface in pro wrestling right now. Thoroughly, without a doubt, the biggest babyface in pro wrestling. He could go to any promotion in the world and get the same reaction. Right? People clapping to his songs, waving along. I believe in Joe Hendry. Right? So let's move on to the rest of the show, though. First question that I'm going to ask and talk about is there's now this idea that Dakota Kai is now benched. And this is not accurate. Have you guys ever heard of no creative plan? From my understanding is they're just waiting for Asuka and Kairi to come back to run a damage control angle. She's not benched. There's just not enough place on TV for her right now. And it sucks, but when you have 175 plus people on the roster, You can't use every single one every week. You got other stories going on right now being told. Just give it some time. She's not benched. I don't know why this we're even talking about this. I'm gonna be honest with you. But I've seen so often, oh, Dakota, Nick Khan lied. Dakota Kai's not benched. That's the worst example you could use to show that Nick Khan was telling a lie. Because, yes, they do bench people. Like Omos, who they pulled from Japan with obviously no creative direction, which makes no sense at all. Right? But anyway, let's talk about Pat McAfee. We might have another 40-minute discussion on this one. Is Pat McAfee good or bad for the WWE product? And in my opinion, the bad outweighs the good. This is just my opinion. Pat McAfee is a net negative for the WWE product. A majority of the fan base can't stand him. Even the ones who do like him, like I don't hate him as a person. I think he's great on College Game Day. He makes that show fun to watch. I think his regular podcast, the Pat McAfee Show, is great. Have no hate for him in the sports sector. But once he crosses over into entertainment and he's on WWE commentary, boy, it's hard to listen to him. Because, and here's why. The commentator's job is to tell stories. Pat McAfee doesn't do that. He doesn't add the stories. He doesn't... He doesn't tell me what's happening. He sort of react. He's a reactor. He reacts to what's going on live in front of him like he's watching it for the first time because he doesn't want to know what's happening. And so he's reacting. He's being reactionary. And that's not that doesn't make a good commentator. It may set up some crazy shit to come out of his mouth, but the crazy shit is what annoys a lot of people. He's a bad commentator. I think he's athletic. I think he makes a great like one-time appearance at a WrestleMania as a surprise entrance. But once you get the week-to-week of Pat McAfee, boy, this gets dangerous. Dangerously just awful, right? As much as he's benefited Jey Uso with doing the Yeet stuff, so that's a good thing. But then some of the stupid shit he says on commentary, or he'll talk during entrances or during promos. Or I still remember one of the things that like told me like, okay, I'm done with this dude is Royal Rumble a couple years ago. I don't remember the exact year when Hardy was performing. And everyone was trashing Hardy. Everyone that was watching, not in the arena, was trashing Hardy for having a bad performance, that it sounded awful. And I'm like, dude, that's because Pat was singing. If Pat would have shut his mouth or turned the mic off, Hardy sounded great. I listened to people in the arena who recorded it. It sounded great. They just didn't have Pat McAfee singing over top of it. And it made that a moment look bad, right? That's not good for the product. Right. From that moment on, I'm like, I don't need Pat McAfee on commentary if he's not going to be quiet in the places he needs to be quiet in. And he says some stupid shit, right? And a lot of people say, well, he's no different than Booker T. Well, that's not true, because everything Booker T does is designed to get people over, because Booker T understands the business. Right. So the whoop that trick. Yeah. Uh-huh. I like it, right? He does that to get the chant over, right? And to notice, hey, Trick Williams, we're trying to get him over. I'm going to get him over. Same thing with Stephanie Vaquer, right? Devil's Kiss gets put on, right? What does everyone do now when she's on Monday Night Raw and she locks in Devil's Kiss? Everyone in the crowd, maybe not everyone, because I know everyone there doesn't watch NXT, but when it happens, what especially now at NXT, if you watch NXT when she does it, what happens? Right? Booker T's on the mic, but the entire crowd's going, right? And it gets the move over, it gets Stephanie more over than what she already was, and it puts an emphasis on the wrestler, not on Booker T. Right? The best I'm gonna stand by this. The best commentary booth in wrestling right now is NXT's. Right? I'm typically not the biggest fan of three-man booths, but I love Corey Graves there. But I will 100% love him on Monday Night Raw if Pat McAfee gets written off, hopefully forever. I don't think we need Pat McAfee. I don't think he adds to the show outside of maybe like the live crowd. Like, I think he's a hype man, but he shouldn't be on commentary. He's a spectacle, right? He's one of those guys that you want to see like once a year, because anything more than that, it doesn't feel special anymore. He's a special attraction, right? So he should be doing your WrestleManias and your SummerSlams, and maybe, right? But I think there's a reason, like he doesn't travel and do a lot of the international stuff, right? Or, for example, the week he got choked out by Gunther and Joe Tess came out there, right? As soon as Joe Tess started on commentary, right, I immediately enjoyed the product a little bit more, because Joe Tessitore tells stories and he knows how to get me invested in what's going on the screen, right? Joe Tess is great. I love him. I'm not saying we can't bring people from the sports world over. I'm just saying, when you bring people over, make them more like Joe Tessitore, who understand his job is to advance a story, not to get the attention on himself. And I feel that's what Pat does a lot, right? So there's that. Let's talk now about this TLC match from last Friday night that, I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch because I was watching the NFL draft. I've gone back and rewatched this match only because I didn't care about the rest of SmackDown. I've watched this match, and it was good, but I think a lot of people are overreacting. This was far, far, far from one of the greatest I've seen people say like greatest TLC match of all time or top three TLC match of all time. And I think that that's a very, very, very hard thing for me to believe. Right? I've seen so many overreactions to this match. The match was fine. But here's my problem. It was fine because of the gimmick. I immediately, like one of the reactions, and again, I don't like to go after casual fans, but this episode, that might be that. I'm gonna swing the paradigm to where I'm going to go over some casual fans for a minute. This idea that, like, I didn't like a certain tag team, but then they did this TLC match, and now I like them. I don't know. I can't buy that. That seems a little bit cheap. It seems a little bit, you're viewing the gimmick as more important than what actually was going on in the story. And so this is why, like, casual fans are always like, or some casual fans are like, I'm here, I watch for the story. And then I sit there and I'm like, well, there's no story really being told in this match. This is just a gimmick match. And they overreact. Great, great. I love this tag team now. This was the stamp of approval. No, you just like gimmick matches. And let's just be honest, Attitude Era wrestling fans who are now in their late 30s, early 40s, maybe mid 30s, right? They love nostalgia and gimmick. Casual fans particularly, but let's just be honest, they're no different. They're no different than the sickos who also pop for the gimmick and for nostalgia. They're the same group. Just a different side of the spectrum. People react to gimmicks. Everyone was going to pop to this match no matter who was in it. You could have put the three worst tag teams in the world, figure out who that is, put them in this TLC match and said, hey, just go out there and beat the shit out of each other. And people, you gave them a table spot, give them some high-flying ladder spots, right? And you would have popped a crowd because of the gimmick. But that doesn't make Motor City Machine Guns. Look, I love Motor City Machine Guns, and I respect their history. They're just not over to me. There's nothing going on with them. There's no story. I love the Street Profits. I think they're probably the best thing on SmackDown until this week, when we'll talk about, add to this conversation of greatest tag teams, because the real actual greatest tag team in all of wrestling is Fraxium, right? Is Fraxium. And they're now on SmackDown, which gives me a reason to want to watch SmackDown. I was begging for a reason to want to watch SmackDown. And Fraxium, if they're on my TV, I will definitely tune in to try to watch, right? But that TLC match, I'm not a fan of TLC, so I'm not going to be the arbiter of what's the greatest one or not. But I know it's not the best. WrestleMania 17 is the best of all time. But this was just a lot of nostalgia. I even saw a post of like, man, I'm glad they replicated the so-and-so spot. Well, they're replicating spots because they know you pop for nostalgia and you pop for gimmicks. But someone like me, who actually stands on business when I say I watch for story, these gimmick matches do nothing for me. Now, the other question is, should this match have been on Mania? And I'm going to give you the answer that no one wants to hear. No. I know we complained about it, but seeing how the WrestleMania card played out, and most, the average match time was 10 minutes or less. This match needed the full 25 minutes it took. So no, this match should not have been on Mania, because it would not have been as good on Mania had it been half the time allotted, right? So who is the greatest tag team? Well, I just told you, it's Fraxium. There's been no tag team in the world of wrestling today that has been better, more consistent, and just great wrestling appeal than Fraxium. And the argument would be, well, they've been on NXT. Well, that, again, that argument makes no sense to me. You don't have to be a main roster commercial success to be known as the greatest at something, right? Right? So, like, Fraxium is, without a doubt, and I'm sure B-Master will agree with me, right? Because I know he watches NXT. I think maybe Wavy D, who I know will watch this as well, I think maybe he will agree with me. I hope he would agree with me, right? If you've watched Fraxium at all over the last year, they've put on the greatest matches. They've defended their titles like 30 times, it feels like. Like, they've gone to TNA. They've wrestled the Hardys. They've put on very consistent product in a division, in a tag team scene in WWE that's not really being taken care of. It's being mistreated. They stand out. As much as we don't care about these sort of gimmick lists from these newspapers and dirt sheets, they've been ranked the best tag team, I think, by all of them. So there's a genuine consensus among the wrestling industry that Fraxium's the greatest tag team. To insert the Street Profits there solely because you like Montez Ford, guys, I love Montez Ford, but the Street Profits are not the greatest tag team in the world right now. They may be top five. But the rest, the tag team division in WWE is really weak right now. I think Fraxium is number one. Number two, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to make this list. All I know is Fraxium's leading, and they're ahead by a lot. That's all I know. That's the greatest tag team. That's all I got to say. That's all I got to say to add to this conversation, right? Let's talk about Lyra and Becky, right? Bro, this fucking shit pisses me off. I'm just going to be honest with you. Like Becky's, first off, Becky can't be a heel. She's awful as a heel. Because she screams, she's a bad promo. This is really going to bring out the worst in Becky Lynch. And not from like a, not saying that from like a positive standpoint. Like, oh, this is going to bring out the worst in the character of Becky. No, no, no. Like, literally the worst. She doesn't know how to promo, right? Even her promo sounded very scripted and WWE stylistic, the way Vince McMahon would write promos. She started like growling. I was listening to JD from NY, and he was like, when it started happening, I thought I was watching I don't watch Lord of the Rings, so I don't know who the fucking character is. It Bilbo Baggins or whatever the fucking dude's name is. My precious. Whatever the fuck his name is. I'm not culturally literate. Frodo, whoever it is, right? He loses the ring or whatever, and he starts growling. My precious. That's what Becky Lynch sounded like on the mic when she was screaming. Like, why? Like, literally, I was sitting there like, why are you screaming? You're growling into the microphone right now. But what this is going to do is highlight what I've been saying about Lyra Valkyrie ever since she's been drafted. She's top 10 in the industry right now. And like, or on the roster, right? If you were to go into the main roster of WWE Superstar, Lyra Valkyrie is better than most in the ring. She's a decent promo. The problem is, the thing that casuals dislike about her is they call her like Bird Girl, or she walks weird, and what, she's playing a gimmick? You hate that she's playing a gimmick? That never ceases to amaze me. Never ceases to amaze me. We'll get to Lyra again in a minute for a good reason. But yeah, I just, this feud, man, this feud. Oh, this should have happened back in January. Now, let me tell you how I would have booked this. Lyra wins on January 6th. February 1st comes, it's Royal Rumble. Becky Lynch wins the title. Lyra wants her rematch. Becky won't give it to her because Becky's the heel now. And she's like, no, you got to earn it, right? And so after week and week and week of not giving the rematch clause, Adam Pearce comes to her and says, you have to defend the belt. You're going to do it at Elimination Chamber. And Becky says, sorry. I can't be at Elimination Chamber. It's just not happening. I can't make it to Toronto. Sorry. Just not happening. Right? And so he's like, well, okay, then. If you're not going to be at Elimination Chamber to defend your title, I have no choice but to strip you of your title. So Becky Lynch says, fine, I'll be there. And instead of getting this weird-ass Trish Stratus, Tiffany Stratton match that did absolutely nothing for Tiffany Stratton, because any momentum this would have been brought in was completely ruined because Tiffany Stratton went off script. By the way, we're going to bring that back up, right? So instead of having that match, you could have done Lyra Valkyrie versus Becky Lynch to give this belt some prestige, right? And have Becky cheat to win. She retains. Lyra goes and says, well, she cheated, Nick. She cheated, Adam. You saw her cheat. Can I get another opportunity? And Adam Pearce says, absolutely. WrestleMania. Where Lyra Valkyrie now has gone a month and a half trying to earn back her title, and Becky Lynch is cheating to win at Elimination Chamber and you know, ducking every advance to get another match. And Adam Pearce says, Becky, WrestleMania, you're defending in a match. And the stipulation is, if Becky Lynch cheats to win, she will forfeit the title. That if Becky Lynch loses by DQ via weapon or count out, or if she cheats to win, she will forfeit the title. That's the stipulation. The rules have to be followed. And Lyra Valkyrie goes over Becky Lynch, getting the redemption, making her a big baby face, by the way. Putting her over. Now she's having a belt that has prestige, that has been used every month, every week, right, that it's been in existence, rather than having Lyra play on the sidelines and wrestle on speed and do tournament matches. All right. So that's my thought on this feud. This feud is too late. I don't really care about it. Becky's a bad heel. Lyra's a great face. And literally, and kayfabe, a great face to look at. We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, so the next thing I want to talk about is, And even people that I like in wrestling, like JD's complained about this, like, oh, the crowd is dead. Guys, they're not dead. The crowd noise is turned down. They turn the mics down. They do. Like, I'm sorry. That's just the fact of wrestling. And I'm tired of hearing about, first off, if the crowd is going to affect how you view the story being told, I'm sorry. But that's a little bit stupid to me. I'm just going to be honest with you. It's a little stupid to me. I don't care how the crowd reacts. Right? But I do have a problem. Or I don't care how loud a crowd is. I do care. Let me rephrase this. I do care when you don't play a role. How many times have you heard me say? How many times have you guys heard me say? In the four seasons now. Well, this is the fourth season. So in the three full seasons that I've done, and half a season we've gotten so far this year. How many times have you heard me say that if you're in a wrestling crowd, you have a role to play? You can't just go all willy-nilly and cheer for the bad guys, right? Because now what's the critique amongst the wrestling universe? Well, why are they booing Cody? He's the good guy. Why are they cheering for Seth? Why are they going one more time? He's the bad guy. Well, that's because crowds don't know how to be crowds. This isn't football. This isn't soccer. This isn't basketball. You can't cheer for whoever you want when you go to a wrestling show. When you buy that ticket, you pay for the experience of the show. You're paying to play a role. You are a vital role in how a story goes over. This is why WWE starts piping in noise, because crowds don't know how to react right. Right? You're not supposed to cheer the bad guys. You're supposed to boo them. You have a role to play. That is the actual problem we should be complaining about with wrestling crowds, not the fact that a crowd is a little bit less noisy than the others. Right? It's really hard to be excited for 3-4 hours at a time, especially when you're not really giving me much of anything to cheer for. I've always told you, the American crowd, you have to give them a reason to cheer. This isn't Europe, right? And this is why I hate when they go to Europe, because everyone now, everything gets compared out to the European crowds, because the European crowds pop. You could literally have a monkey shitting in the ring and the crowd will pop for it in Europe. I'm not even kidding. Might get the loudest pop of the night. Right? These crowds, they don't, and again, if you let the crowd dictate how you feel about the show, I don't think that that's fair. Right? I just don't think that that's fair. Let the story tell itself, because that's what we're watching for, is it not? I'm not watching to see how the crowd reacts. I'm watching to see a story take place. And you could be dead ass, but it also, like, if that's boring to you, don't go to Japan. For God's sake, don't watch Japan wrestling, because they will literally the entire match. Right? There's very little, because it's a respect thing in their culture. You're quiet when you're watching the show. Right? I just think I think it's really, really, really stupid to complain about whether a crowd is hot or not. I don't really think it pays or plays that big of a factor in whether the show is good or not. People just overreact to that stuff. Oh, the Kansas crowd sucks again. No, they just want you to give them something entertaining and then they'll pop, right? I don't pay much attention to it. But when you start cheering the bad guy, I do pay attention to it, because that's not what you're supposed to do. Know your role and do it, right? Now let's talk about Backlash, because I feel this card leaves a little bit to wish for. So I think we got three matches that are 100% guaranteed, and that's Orton and Cena, Lyra and Becky, and Pat McAfee and Gunther. So if this is following the five match setup, we got two more matches. Boy, what are we going to do with these two matches? Well, are we doing Jay and Logan Paul? I can see that happening at a Backlash. a quick little win for Jey Uso. I think the other match we will do will be Rhea and Io Sky tagging against Roxanne and Julia for two reasons. This adds to Rhea and Io's story that I think will ultimately be the big story in the women's division on Monday Night Raw. It completely brings Roxanne and Julia to the forefront, but I think it also leads to Evolution 2, which I do think gets announced at Backlash. I think they're waiting till Backlash next Saturday to announce that. But I also don't know if those are going to be the matches, because you can't forget, 2 weeks after Backlash, we have Saturday night's main event. We have a whole weekend in Tampa, baby. We got Friday night SmackDown in Tampa, Saturday night's main event in Tampa. Oh, and the greatest show going head to head against Double or Nothing is NXT Battleground live from Tampa Bay on Saturday, May the 24th or 5th. I don't remember which day exactly is Sunday. I think it's the 25th is Battleground. 24th will be Saturday night's main event. Yeah. So Saturday the 24th is Saturday night's main event. So what are we going to get there? Because I think this is where they're trying to build long-term to. So I think that's where we're going to get, I think that's where we're going to get the Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins match. Right? And I think it's going to be Sami and Punk versus Seth and Braun. Right? A lot of people are like, well, we're building the Backlash. If this is going to be the match, where's CM Punk at after getting attacked 2 weeks ago? Where's Roman? Well, Roman's been basically confirmed not to be on TV till at least Money in the Bank. Hey, that's about the time I told you were going to get fed again, right? Yeah. It's like I know shit. Roman Reigns is winning Money in the Bank, by the way. That's my pre-Money in the Bank prediction. Roman Reigns is winning Money in the Bank. It's the only thing he hasn't won in WWE, and I think it's going to set up something long-term. But just we'll wait for that. But I think Saturday night main event will be Sami and Punk versus Seth and Braun Breaker. I think that's where the new member is shown up. I think Tiffany will, if Rhea and Io, they're not technically defending the titles, or Io's not technically defending the title, but it's going to be on the champion's going to be on the card in some form. I think Tiffany and Nia Jax will be the match at Saturday night main event. Nia hasn't had an actual rematch on a PLE type card. I think we'll get AJ Styles and Dominic at Saturday night's main event. I think we'll get the War Raiders New Day rematch at Saturday night's main event. We know John Cena will be there, but not sure if it's in a wrestling capacity. I don't think it will be. We'll play into the angle of, I told you I would be at 27 appearances, not 27 matches. So Cena will be there. Those are where I think we're headed, right? Maybe some other match to build into Revolution. Maybe Zelina and Chelsea do another one. Good thing to check is, where is this event being held? I have no idea. Oh, no. Well, duh. I'm a fucking retard. I just told you where it was at. It's in Tampa. It's in Florida. Maybe we get, I don't know. I don't know if that really changes much of anything from what I've already told you. But yeah, that's where I think it's going. I think we're building some of the bigger stuff for Saturday night's main event. And we're really leaning, I think, on Backlash on the Cena Orton shit. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to see a match with old ass Cena running that old ass heel style versus Randy Orton. That match is not going to be good. I'm just going to go ahead and warn you guys. Lyra versus Becky might be good. Pat versus Gunther better go one way. It better go one way, and that is Pat McAfee getting absolutely obliterated. Yeah. Let's talk, though, about the Sami Zayn storyline, because I want to go a little bit deep dive into what I think, where this is going long term. This is the long term. So I've said that, you know, Triple H needs long at least one long term feud to be the anchor of his product for the year, right? So his first year is finishing the Bloodline saga and ending with Cody winning the title, right? The next year after that was Punk and Drew, right? That lasted about 85% of the year, and he was able to tell a year-long feud, basically, right? That led into War Games, right? So I think where we're headed with this, what I'm trying to say is Sami Zayn and Seth Rollins will be the long-term feud into WrestleMania 42, and I'm going to book this story all the way till WrestleMania 42 from current day. So here's where I think happens, right? At some point in the distant future, in the near future, I think Seth Rollins will beat Jey Uso for the championship. That is very pertinent, by the way, that Seth Rollins wins. And I think that could happen. So you got Backlash next Saturday, Saturday night main event. I don't think that it'll happen that soon. June's pay-per-view is Money in the Bank, isn't it? Or is that in July? June might be the Saudi show. So I think Seth Rollins is going to win the title at the Saudi show. I do, and that's very important because Saudi's going to play a big role, and you'll see this here in a minute, right? So I think Seth Rollins wins the title at the Saudi show, which probably will be Night of Champions. We know it won't be Crown Jewel because Crown Jewel will be is the name of Australia's. You know, they've been running like the WWE TakeOver Perth ads, and they're like, well, we're going to have a Raw, and we're going to have a SmackDown. We're going to have the SmackDown before the PLE. We're going to have the Raw after the PLE. And we have an unnamed PLE. Well, it's now named. It's Crown Jewel Perth in October on Rhea Ripley's birthday of all days. Anyways, so we know it won't be Crown Jewel. So it probably will be a Night of Champions in Saudi, where we'll get five championship matches, maybe a sixth match of Goldberg versus Gunther. Though I think the Goldberg match will happen at SummerSlam is the rumor. So we'll see. I hope it doesn't happen at all. I'm just going to be completely honest with you. I don't want to see Goldberg ever again. But that's probably what's going to happen with Gunther. Anyway, so Seth wins the title from Jey Uso at Saudi. He holds the title for a while, using his minions like Braun Breaker and whoever the new guy is. Again, emulating. Sami Zayn's not wrong. He's emulating the Bloodline. This is essentially the Bloodline without Roman Reigns, right? And it's working. It's great. It's a good stuff. It's some good stuff here, right? They have a chance, you know, I don't know if we're going to do a full evolution. Who's the Randy Orton? I don't think we're going to do that. I think he's going to get some enforcers. So I think Bronson Reed could be one that could get a big push out of this immediately. I think you could bring in, I'm just going to be completely honest with you. This would be a very great spot to put a man you pulled from Japan named Omos, who's been a bodyguard before. He doesn't have to wrestle matches. He could just be your fucking enforcer. He could just be the guy that you throw in front of Seth whenever someone tries to attack Seth. Omos would work perfectly in this group. I'm just saying. It'll give him something to do and put him in a major spotlight. Just saying. And so he's going to win the title. He's going to hold it for a while, right? The other side, the Sami Zayn side, right? Sami Zayn's main thing is he's going to win the title on his own. Well, he's going to go a long time before this really plays out. But where it really plays out is Royal Rumble. That's right. We're still in the midst of this feud. I think Seth will offer numerous times, take the deal, go to SmackDown. I'm going to beat your ass, right? And he beats his ass and then says again, take the deal or it's going to happen again, right? And we get the Saudi Arabia 2026 Royal Rumble where Sami Zayn, the ultimate babyface, wins the championship, wins the Royal Rumble. Sami Zayn's winning Royal Rumble, guys. It's in Saudi. You think they're going to put anyone else over? It's Sami Zayn. And Sami Zayn versus Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 42, where Sami Zayn will culminate this story and win the World Heavyweight Championship. At WrestleMania, he gets his one little run before he hangs up the boots and calls it a career. And I think that could legitimately be it for Sami Zayn. 100%. I think he loves the comedy stuff. I think he loves, you know, I think he could transition into a trainer role, work a part-time schedule, do some of the more entertaining aspects of the business. Right? I think they're going to transition him into something like that. I think even the same with like Seth Rollins. Like how much longer can Rollins really go? Right? So that storyline, I think it's a year-long story. Sammy's going to win the title at Mania after winning Rumble in Saudi. And that's where I see this going. I said immediately, my immediate reaction was Sammy's going to turn into be the one to take the title off Jay. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Sammy's going to, you know, be this babyface that gets beat down. Seth keeps offering him an easy way out. The devil tempting Jesus type thing where the devil's standing on his shoulders and like, you can have the world. You can have the world if you just bow down to me, take the deal. And Sammy says, no, no, no. And then he's going to go over and defeat the evil Seth Rollins faction at WrestleMania. Where that leaves Bron Breakker, I don't know. I think Bron Breakker could then be the guy that wins the title off of Sammy. I think you could do that. I don't think Sammy needs a long run. Again, title reigns don't actually mean nothing. It's the story, right? It's the story of overcoming and winning, right? So I don't think the reigns really matter how long it is for Sammy. It's the fact that he won it, right? Sort of like that Daniel Bryan story where Daniel Bryan's reign was, you know, once he won it, was very bad. He was immediately beat down by the Authority. I don't remember how long he held the title for, but we don't remember that, right? We remember Daniel Bryan overcoming all the obstacles and winning the title at WrestleMania 30, right? So this is that same thing, right, to me. So that's where I see the storyline going. All right. I've talked enough, haven't I? I know you guys could go a lot longer. But with that being said, we're going to end this show with a brand new segment that I'm going to call the Deep Five. Now, the Deep Five is a segment were we too deep? That's me. I'm going to give the five hottest baddies of the week. Here's the caveat. It's not from Instagram. It's not from Twitter. It's from how you looked on the show that week. From Friday to Thursday, right? So last week's SmackDown, this week's Raw, this week's NXT, any product that I've seen, that's what I'm ranking from. And this week's top five, this is in no particular order. It's not a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ranking. It's just who I think the top five baddies are this week. We're going to start with Io Sky from NXT. She is in crackers. She, you know, I've said a little bit that I don't think she's, I don't know. She's earning my respect here. I don't know what it is, but Io Sky looked good on NXT on Tuesday. She looked good. Also from NXT is Sol Ruka. She looks good. She's probably going to be in this list every week. I'm going to be honest with you. Sol Ruka looks good every week. But yeah, nah, she looked good with that title on her waist as well. Yeah, so she's on the list. The remaining three are from Monday Night Raw. We'll start with Roxanne Perez. Looking good. The yellow really makes her stand out a little bit. Lyra Valkyria. Y'all be hating on her for no reason. She a baddie. I'm going to need some respect on her name. And as always, she has a permanent spot on the Deep Five list. Even if she's not on TV, she was on TV. So this is from Raw. But ooh, even better, Tuesday night on the list. She was at the end for about 30 seconds. I was going to be sad if I didn't see her on Tuesday. But I got her on a match on Monday. So, you know, you can't have too much of a good thing, right? It'll kill you. Stephanie Vacare. Without a doubt. If there was a ranking, she would be number one. Stephanie Vacare. First off, great match against Ivy Nile. It's a little bit, it was not the best match, but it was a great, it was a good match. It was a good one. You know, if anyone needs to volunteer to take the Devil's Kiss, if you need a volunteer, WWE, and you want to make Stephanie look over, I volunteer as tribute. Anyway, that was weird. Sorry. But I volunteer as tribute to take the Devil's Kiss from Stephanie Vacare. And in the words of Booker T, we go, ah, ah, ah. Anyway, that's how we're going to end the show. Thank you all for watching. My name's Wee Too Deep. This is the Slap and Mead Wrestling Podcast. And until next time, we will be back this Tuesday. I don't know if you guys saw. I didn't really address this. But we will be back next Tuesday. I needed a break from podcasting after such a long haul of episodes that I put in the previous 2 weeks. I was a little bit burnt out. Got relaxed on Tuesday. So we will be back, me and Wavy D, on Tuesday. And until then, hope you guys enjoy your weekend. Cinco de Mayo is on Monday. Y'all be safe. Be responsible. And I'll see you on Tuesday. So hit that subscribe. Come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.